by the Forest Service officers while he manned a barricade. And he said his disillusionment grew when he felt his peaceful attempts at making reforms were thwarted, and explains that that's how he ended up escalating tactics. Well, you know what? The tactics used against the forest resistors have been escalated to such a point that there is very, very real danger involved. And the response, he was sentenced originally, I remember, to 22 years. Now he's landscaping and feeling like that's making a difference. I leave you to make of that what you will. So the University of Oregon is planning to make it more difficult to drive to the new Cascade campus. They're just not going to, they figured it out. No parking spots. And about in Salt Lake City, about 75 atheists, most of them former Mormons, marched around the Temple Square there on Sunday during the Mormons General Conference. This is a huge conference. Hundreds of thousands of people attend. Many mailed resignations to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints at the end of the walk. This is dubbed the Mormon Exodus and Mass Resignation event by atheists of Utah. And in case you had better things to do yesterday than watch Fox TV, you may have missed that channel's celebration of the 25th, as they said, anniversary of the Bush presidency. They didn't give any details when the 25-year clock started running. Who says America doesn't have a political system based on a royal lineage, money, and power? A meritocracy based on merit obtained through money and power. Thus, we witness a spectacle of Jeb Bush proclaiming that all the speculation about whether he'll run for the presidency in 2016 is actually getting him more attention than if he'd already entered the race. And on the subject of elections, Afghanis just wrapped theirs up with some violence, not as much as expected. And India begins voting today in the world's biggest election. We also have weather. We'll save that bit for the KBOO website. We've got some alternative bits for you. The moon is 7 days old. It's a flower moon in Gemini. This is the first quarter moon. So that said, let's move right on and speak with Jim Powers, because mega lows are coming to a courtroom near you. Good morning, Jim. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Well, how did this happen? Why are we fighting the same battles all over again? And furthermore, this is basically an obsolete technology. It's more costly to extract power, energy, from the tar sands than it would be to, say, develop solar arrays. What's going on?
Well, the problem in Oregon is that the Oregon Department of Justice has sided with the Oregon Department of Transportation in saying that the public can avoid what is in the public interest. The law says that ODOT... So the question we have is it in the public interest to run megaloads through Oregon? Should the public have a voice in that decision? The law that allows ODOT to issue these permits says they can issue them if they determine it is in the public interest to do so. So a bunch of us tried to weigh in with ODOT, and they said, sorry, you don't have standing, and we don't have to give you standing, and you don't have a voice. And we said, well, what? You know, we're the public. And they said, no, you're not. You don't get a voice. So that's why it's in court. We're asking the court to make a determination of whether there can be a public process to at least get public hearings on what is in the public interest.
These are our roads. Taxpayers pay for the roads, right?
Correct. Well, right. We pay for the roads, but the corporations get to run their trucks on them. ODOT can't even weigh these trucks. They're so big, 901,000 pounds. They don't have scales for them. How can they determine it's in the public interest to run something they can't even weigh? They don't determine. They say they determine that they're not wrecking our roads, but we don't think that's true, but we can't even ask the question. So the best thing I can ask the listeners to do is to call and write the governor. The governor, it's his department. ODOT is his department. He has the power to create a public process to listen to the public. That's all we're asking for. Please listen to the public. We are the public, not Omega Morgan, who's applying for these permits.
It seems amazing that, they're so willing and ready to simply sign off on this without anyone being allowed to weigh in. And if we are allowed to weigh in, then the governor has demonstrated on past occasions regarding timber sales that he doesn't listen. I want to thank you very much for that. We want to have you back on the show to keep us posted on this. So, write the governor, the address right there on the KBOO website. You can find it easily, and it takes no time at all. In fact, come down to the station. I'll buy you stamps and paper in the whole works, or email him, whatever you like. You know what? An actual handwritten letter, though, says a lot more. Jim, I want to thank you.
Thanks for your interest.
Thank you so much. For that, my guest has been Jim Powers. We have now we've got just in a couple few minutes left. Jody McCaffrey once again joining us on the KBOO airwaves. Good morning, Jody. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And don't forget, everybody, the website to go to is Citizens Against LNG. Very, very easy to remember. So Citizens Against LNG, and it is critical right now that everyone direct their attention south to Coos Bay, because this is something that once it's done, we cannot call this back. You cannot. The ocean is enormous. It's connected. It connects the entire world. There's no turning back from this. We're about to make a terrible error. Can you tell us what's going on right now?
Well, there's a lot of local stuff going on. There's some local land use permits, and the pipeline, obtained permits earlier for the import terminal, but we had conditions on those permits that the pipeline could only be used for imported gas. Now that they want to export,
they just expected to flip the documents over and run it in the other direction, right?
Right, and so they've had to go and do amendments, and we've had hearings on that, and now our citizens have rose up and filed appeals both in Coos and Douglas County on these, but you know, we're just citizens, so it's been very stressful to get the, do the things legally, properly, and get the legal help that we need. So we have appeals. We're working on those right now, and there's other processes that have gone. If you go to the website, I've tried to cover it. I still got to work on getting it updated, because they've tried to do a community fund, private community fund, where they would pay them their tax, property tax money into, instead of paying it into the normal channels. And it's been very controversial. On April 1st, there was two meetings, one with the Coos County Board of Commissioners and one with the Coos Bay City Council, where citizens rose up and raised such a stink about this that those councils decided to hold off a while on this and look at it a little closer before they signed on the dotted line. But they're steamrolling right over us as much as they can. So we could use the support and help as much as we can. DEQ has comments due on the clean air permits by April 15th. That the first round of that process for them to obtain their clean air.
This is the time, everybody. Summer's coming. You want a beach? Now's the time to raise your voice and stand in solidarity with people, Jody, and people like her. Although there's very few people like Jody, but nonetheless, stand in solidarity with her and Citizens Against LNG, because this is the last chance that we are going to get. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, April 7th, 2014. Kate Walsh engineered the show today. Thanks so much, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson, the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. Thanks again, Kathleen. And this is Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
Joanne Rand and Jim Page. Together, Rand and Page will pack a Cascadian folk wallop celebrating Rand's new album, Still a Real World, at the Alberta Rose Theater on Tuesday, April 8th at 8 p.m. A portion of the proceeds from this amazing show will benefit KBOO, so you folk fans don't want to miss this one. For more details, go to kboo.fm and check under Community Events here at your community radio station, KBOO.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. When you look out your window, why are you so much more likely to see a crow or a robin than a Kirtland's warbler or California condor? How much does this rarity of species have to do with human activities, and why are some species who never have any contact with humans also rare? This morning, we'll get some answers to these questions from my guest, Eric Dinnerstein, who's author of The Kingdom of Rarities. We'll talk about the ecological importance of these rare species and the urgency of protecting all types of life, the uncommon and abundant alike. Eric Dinnerstein is lead scientist and vice president for conservation science at the World Wildlife Fund. Eric, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I want to say I enjoyed your book very much because it was a perspective on rarities that I've never really had an opportunity to embrace. And it's made me think about how we often think of endangered and rare species as the same thing, and yet there is quite a distinction. I wonder if you can tell us, what is the difference?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's not just you, but there are even many scientists out there who don't realize that most species on Earth are rare. So, in fact, rarity is common. So the difference between an endangered and a rare species is, so a species can be rare if it has a very narrow range or it has a very low population density, but it could be distributed over a very large area. But endangered species typically are those that have low numbers, are usually only in a very few places, and are often threatened by some major human activity. Anything from loss of habitat to flooding to fire.
Well, you talk in your book about you basically go around the world chasing after all kinds of rarities, but some of these rarities, they're rare and has nothing to do at all with human interaction. They're not close to urbanization or farming or any of the other hazards of human activity. So why are certain species more rare than other species?
Well, let's take the easiest example. So top predators. Whether we're talking about tigers in Nepal, as I do in my book, or great white sharks, there are probably about the same number of tigers on Earth as there are great white sharks, probably no more than 3,500 right now in the wild. And wherever they occur at very low densities. And the reason is that it simply takes a lot of prey items to be able to support a single top predator. So that's the easy one, where you have a species is at the top of the food pyramid, and you just simply can't have a lot of them in a given area. On top of that, tigers are extremely territorial, and the reason being is that they have to defend large areas where there's enough food to be able to produce their cubs. We know that it takes about 52 elk-sized deer eaten a year, so about one a week, to fuel a breeding female tiger. So it's really basically a matter of energetics.
So after we start with the top of the food chain with the primary predators, there are other species that also tend to be very rare, even though they have no contact with humans. And what's the reason for that?
So that's the other extreme, is a species with very narrow ranges. And that's much more typical of rarity, because we don't have that many top predators around on the planet. Thank goodness. They'd be hunting us as biologists as we're out there in the field. We have a lot of species, for example, a lot of plants that are very restricted because of the type of soil substrate that you find them on. You know, a famous botanist once said that really botany is all about geology, because a lot of plants are limited by where they can make a living, where they can be found, by the kind of soil type. And so when you have unusual soils, soils with like a lot of heavy metals in them, or sandstone or limestone or quartz, you tend to have plants with very narrow distributions. So what it means is that you have a lot of species. So basically, most species on Earth are specialists of one kind or another. But some species are specialists in habitats that are extremely abundant, like species that might live in grasslands. But other species, so they have a wide distribution, but other species might be found only in, say, a very unique kind of habitat with certain climate or soil conditions, and that habitat is not very widespread on the planet. Therefore, that species becomes rare.
Now, when a species has a very limited habitat that it can thrive in, is it more possibly open to endangerment by human interaction than species like robins, or, well, actually, robins, but I mean, I understand a lot of songbirds that are real generalists are also becoming endangered or are becoming threatened in the United States.
That's true. So a number of breeding bird surveys have shown that a lot of birds have declined, but really that's largely because of loss of habitat. We know that, for example, here in the East, you know, right now in Washington, D.C., I'm looking out and it's 76 degrees and the birds should be back soon, or spring migrants. But the problem they face when they come back here is that the really large blocks of forest habitat that they need, the warblers, the flycatchers, the tanagers, have largely disappeared. And what we have is a lot of habitat fragmentation. And when you have that, a lot of predators can enter and destroy their nests, eat their eggs or eat their nestlings. So it's a severe problem. And the same thing for grassland birds is